Welcome in and welcome back to another edition of NBA Sound System. Gil McGregor here with my guy, Kyle Irving. It's been a minute, Kyle. How you doing, man?
I'm good, man. Right when you started this, I was like thinking in my head, I'm like, yeah, it's going to be back from Christmas break. Like, at what age do you stop calling the holidays Christmas break?
Never. You never do. You never do.
Because like you know, I get back and I'm like, you know, yeah, it was, you know, good spending time at home with my family. It was a really nice Christmas break. And then I'm like, well, all right, well, I haven't been in college in, I don't even know, what, 8 years or something like that. So I'm like, all right, I don't think I can keep calling it Christmas break. Yeah, you're right. My bad.
No, it's funny. It's true though, right? Because like we're all on different schedules and everybody's like kind of all over the place. And that's why we have not been able to get on the same page to be able to record. But I'm glad to be back. And hopefully you guys miss hearing us just as much as we both missed potting. I don't even know where to begin. Also, I should say Happy New Year. It's the first pot of 2024. A lot going on in the NBA. A lot has happened since we recorded the last time. A lot has happened since we last posted an episode. Draymond Green was suspended indefinitely and has been reinstated from the indefinite suspension and contemplated retirement in the time that we have last recorded. So maybe we just were in solidarity with Draymond Green. I don't know where to go with that. But I guess the place to start, honestly, is the frustrating part that we've reached of the season. We got to turn these injuries off, man. This past week alone, Chris Paul out 4 to 6 weeks with a fractured hand. Cade Cunningham, not as serious, but knee injury that they really kind of breathe a sigh of relief that it wasn't that serious. Tyrese Haliburton, scary slip and fall, grade one hamstring injury. He's out for at least 2 weeks. But then the tough one, Ja Morant. He actually came back from suspension in the time that we weren't around, had an epic game back with a game winner, really had the Grizzlies playing inspired basketball, looked like they might even be able to work up a heroic midseason turnaround. He's out for the season, season-ending surgery on his shoulder, torn labrum, and it's just a bummer. I'm bummed for him and the Grizzlies and their fans. Honestly, I hate to start on a bad note, but that's kind of we're only getting bad news this week.
Yeah, I mean, you took the words out of my mouth with the Ja Morant thing. You talked about Draymond Green getting suspended and, you know, ramping up to come back in the time that we had last recorded. I mean, we missed Ja Morant's return in the electric 9 games that he played and just how much fun, like being reminded of how much fun it is to watch Ja Morant on the basketball court. And then you talk about, you know, the actual team success side of it. They were 6-3 in the games that he played. And like, they weren't really all that far out. Like, that's kind of the beauty of the play-in tournament, is they weren't really all that far out of, you know, playoff consideration again. And, you know, it looked like they were going to end up being that type of play-in team of why you had that, you know, play-in tournament in the first place. Of there wasn't a single, you know, number one or two seed in the Western Conference that would have wanted to see Ja Morant and the Memphis Grizzlies in the first round of the playoffs. And then all of a sudden he gets this injury in practice, training, whatever it was, and he's out for the rest of the season with a torn labrum. So, you know, just really, really tough news, like you said. But also, you know, when it comes to guys like Tyrese Haliburton, I mean, I was watching that game live last night as he slipped and took that kind of ugly fall and got carried off the court with a towel around his head. And with the season that he's having, playing at an all-star caliber level, all NBA caliber level, really proving that he's one of the best point guards in the NBA, you really started to like kind of like shudder at the idea that like, oh no, is this going to be something that completely derails his season and completely derails the Pacers season? So it's really, really nice to find out that, you know, that wasn't as serious as we had thought it might be. But you know, I'm just kind of an aside, because you and I are both sneaker guys. That was the first time I've ever seen him rocking high top Kobe's in my entire life. He usually wears the low tops, and he slipped a couple times last night, like throughout that game. And then when he kind of took that big fall, I was like, damn, man, like, do not be a season ending injury. I mean, the guy's been so special all year. He's been one of the best players in the NBA. So, you know, it's a good thing that his injury wasn't as serious, but it's really, really unfortunate for NBA fans everywhere that Ja Morant is going to be limited to only 9 games, because, I mean, that guy is one of the most, you know, fun showmen in the leagues when he has the ball rolling.
Yeah, I think the thing, and I talked about this, I actually wrote this over at the Sporting News when Ja and the Lakers were playing in L.A. Last week and got a win over the Lakers, and we'll get to them later because they have their own issues that they're dealing with. But just looking at historic examples of teams like last year's Lakers, the Pelicans a few years ago, that struggled out of the gates and figured things out, turned things around, and just got a chance to get their foot in the door and then made something of it. You know, looking at the Grizzlies and where they were, they had their work cut out for them, but it's really been a nightmarish season for them. In addition to Ja's suspension and injury, you've got Brandon Clark still working to get back into the lineup. Marcus Smart's been in and out of the lineup with injuries. Luke Kennard has been in and out of the lineup with injuries. Santi Aldama, Steven Adams is out for the year. He had season-ending surgery before the season began. So, you know, it was just things just kind of piled up with this Grizzlies team. And on the flip side, the Pacers have been overachieving, and a lot of it, and all of it, this has to do with Tyrese Haliburton averaging shade under 24 points per game, leading the league in assists per game. And we've talked about it before, really has taken that crown as the best pure point guard in the NBA. And I look at these two teams because the Grizzlies have had, you know, top finishes in the Western Conference the last few years, and they made some moves in getting a guy like Marcus Smart to kind of take that next step. Whereas the Pacers are kind of ahead of schedule. They were linked to Pascal Siakam. They're linked to guys and maybe making a move to kind of make a leap to where the Grizzlies have been in years past. But I think that I say that to say, I'm curious now, what is the pivot, right? If you're the Grizzlies, do you just mail it in and say, you know what, like 12 is done for the year. Let's just try and get as good of a draft pick as we can in a draft that's a little iffy. And if you're the Pacers, are you like, man, Tyrese Haliburton is out for at least 2 weeks. That puts us right ahead of the trade deadline. Do we really want to push all the chips in right now, or do we focus on Jalen Smith and Obi Toppin and Isaiah Jackson and get Jairus Walker some time on the floor? I think it puts these teams in a really interesting position, these injuries, because there's a ripple effect on both sides.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to start with the Grizzlies, you know, this is a unique situation for them where one, it allows guys like Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. to really kind of open it up and, like, you know, do as much as they can offensively, and kind of like, you know, this is their team now for the rest of the season. And, you know, however it kind of goes, like, they're going to have to just roll with those punches. And if it's as ugly as it was through the first, whatever it was, 25 games before Ja Morant came back, then, you know, like you said, the silver lining is they're going to end up with a really good draft pick. And you know what, to your point, it's not a very strong draft class. There's not a lot of, like, high-end prospects who you're going to be able to build your franchise around. But, like, in the situation that the Memphis Grizzlies are in, this is not a bad draft to have a high pick, because you already have your franchise player in Ja Morant. You already have, you know, solid second, third options in Desmond Bain and in Jaren Jackson Jr. So to find, you know, they could potentially find a very solid role player who fits exactly what they're looking for. And I'm not exactly sure what that is, because they have some young pieces on that roster. You know, they have a lot of holes to fill just in general, whether they need, you know, a backup guard, maybe it's another shooter on the wing, maybe they need to find a center replacement for Steven Adams. But whatever it might be, like, they're going to be able to find someone who can contribute to that rotation in the draft if that's the direction that they end up heading in. You know, for the Pacers, I think you make a great point about how Haliburton's injury, you don't want to say it came at the right time, because, like you said, they were kind of in those rumors of maybe, you know, they could get Pascal Siakam. You know, I mean, I don't really think they were going to be a Zach LaVine destination, but, like, as these names are starting to pop up and these players are starting to become available, like, it didn't come in a right time in that sense. But in the idea that they are still going to have some time to work with Haliburton coming back before the trade deadline, then they can kind of really figure out, like, okay, where do we want to take the direction of this season? And a lot of that is probably going to depend on how, you know, guys step up in Halliburton's absence. I mean, TJ McConnell was awesome in that game last night against the Celtics, and we've seen him step up in those roles in, you know, smaller sample sizes when need be in the past. That's kind of why you have a veteran like him. Andrew Nembhard's another guy that I expect to step up, a Canadian, you know, who's played some solid basketball for the Pacers. So, you know, I do think that Tyrese Haliburton proved enough and showed enough, you know, through the first, whatever it was, 30 something games of the season, that even if the Pacers, you know, operate and try and get a player like Pascal Siakam and look towards the future, like, they're comfortable doing that and pushing all the chips in because they know what that team could look like at full strength.
No, that makes perfect sense. And I think that, you know, especially given the state of the Eastern Conference, where it's really kind of right now looking like the Celtics and everybody else, the Bucks having their struggles right now as well. And we say all that, they still have a really good record, but they also haven't played that tough of a schedule, and the Pacers have their number. So if the Pacers truly believe that, you know, if they make a big splash, they can win a playoff series, I think that would do wonders for a young group like that. And also, they have to make some decisions about guys that they need to retain and guys are going to have to pay moving forward. And that's the other side of having a team full of young players. I want to ask you real quick, because we're starting to see other fan bases kind of clamor for him. Marcus Smart, I've seen him photoshopped in two different jerseys already. Sixers, Heat, Celtics fans, close your ears, because I think that would be probably the biggest nightmare, but I could see it happening. But the Grizzlies gave up a lot to get Marcus Smart. I kind of feel like they wouldn't just trade him easily. Where do you stand? Or do you think that, you know, when you mentioned the Grizzlies kind of giving the keys back to Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr., and they're not looking over their shoulders anymore, do you get as much as you can for a guy like Marcus Smart and really hit the reset button? But also understanding he's under contract for a little while, and he could be a big part of building that culture there. I see both sides of it.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, you know, there's the side of it, like you said, where you could probably still get a ton in return for Marcus Smart if you're trading him to a contender like Philly, like Miami. I try not to vomit as I say that out loud. but, you know, at the same time, like, this is kind of like why the Grizzlies brought him in the first place. Like, he was supposed to bridge that gap until John Morant got back. And then he ended up getting hurt himself, which piled onto the injuries that you already mentioned that they had. And that's why things kind of went off the rails the way that they did. But, like, now that he's back and healthy, like, I would think that they're going to hold on to him and hope that he can kind of bridge that gap until John Morant gets back. You know, I don't know if that'll actually be the case. Maybe they do just dangle him out there and see, you know, how much could we really get in return for this guy. But to your point, he's under contract through the 2025-26 season. So they still have him, you know, wrapped up for a couple more years. If they think that he's a part of, you know, this core that they are trying to build a championship caliber team around John Morant with, which I think he could be a really good fit next to Ja and Desmond Bane and Jaren Jackson. Like, he's the type of complementary player that can take a team from, you know, maybe a first, second round exit, conference finals to an NBA finals caliber team. But, you know, I think that it would be wise of them to at least go out there and see what they might be able to get in return from those types of contenders that might be interested in acquiring Marcus Smart's talents. But to me right now, I feel like he's going to stay in Memphis. I'd be pretty shocked if they parted ways with him, you know, as soon as they, you know, as soon as they see the first kind of ripple or first kind of like hurdle of adversity that they have to face, because it felt like he was kind of supposed to be a part of this plan they have moving forward.
Absolutely. Last thing, when you mentioned the fit that he has with those guys, I immediately just thought about the point guard to point guard alley-oop from Marcus Smart to Ja to seal a game in New Orleans a few weeks ago. Now, we can't talk trades without talking the biggest trade of the year so far. It could go down as being the biggest trade of the 2023-24 season. That is to be determined. But right before the year ended, the Raptors said, let us get in on the action. Let's make a big splash. OG Anunoby's time as a Toronto Raptor sadly came to an end. He, Malachi Flynn, and Precious Achiuwa off to the Big Apple, but it's a homecoming. RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickly are Toronto Raptors. We've seen them a few games in a Raptors uniform, and we've seen OG a few games in a Knicks uniform. And early returns suggest it's one of the rare trades. Everybody wins. Everybody's happy. First, what were your thoughts when the trade initially happened? And I guess we could take a bigger step back and kind of say what we think so far from what we've seen, and also what this means moving forward for both these franchises.
Yeah, I mean, right away, like, not to ride the fence, but kind of like you were just saying, it doesn't really feel like that was a trade where there was a clear winner or loser. Like, OG Anunoby is a great fit in New York for what they're trying to do, and he's already made a massive impact. There was that stat the other day that since he joined the Knicks, he leads the NBA in plus minus. He's been extremely helpful for that Knicks organization. That's the type of player they were looking for to try and push them, you know, into that upper tier. You know, you and I like to tier the Eastern Conference a decent amount. The Knicks are knocking on the door of trying to get into that group with, you know, Philly and Boston and Miami and Milwaukee. And, you know, I feel like they thought that this is the type of move that can get them a step closer. But, you know, on the Raptors side, like, I love it. I love the return that they got. I think RJ Barrett, like, it was about time for him to hit the refresh button. And I think that, you know, there's no place better for him to do that than home in Toronto, in Canada. He seems really excited about it. I mean, the guy's averaging 21 points on 50-50 shooting splits so far, which I don't know if he's going to continue to shoot over 50% from three for his career as a Raptor, but he's definitely off to a hell of a start. And then, you know, Emmanuel Quickly is someone who I didn't realize, like, how many I'd always been pretty high on Emmanuel Quickly, but I didn't realize how many other people were high on Emmanuel Quickly until we saw this deal go down. You start to see some of the reactions. And, you know, a lot of people echoed the same sentiment that it's, you know, he could end up being the best player in this deal if things work out with him and Darko Rajakovic and the way that he can operate that offense. You know, he kind of gets that ceiling that he had on him as a six man only in New York, like, kind of like, he gets the keys to the offense a little bit more in Toronto. He's proven to be a capable pick and roll ball handler. Like, I feel like he kind of gives them a little bit of like a shake and a little bit of a jolt that they haven't had At the point guard position. I mean, Fred VanVleet had just left this past season, but like they'd kind of been looking for a guy like Emmanuel Quickley. So, you know, I really feel like the Raptors made out pretty well. Those are two guys who right away, as we've seen, has made that offense better. That half court offense is better. That's something that the Raptors have struggled with for years now. Again, small sample size alert. Obviously, the Raptors have only played four games with these guys. They're 3-1, but just out of curiosity, I looked before this and I think they have the sixth best offensive rating in the NBA with Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett in the lineup. So, you know, those returns are paying immediate dividends. I think as a Raptors fan, like you're excited for the Raptors to finally hit the reset button because they had just been stuck in mediocrity. And now this gives them two young players to be excited about moving forward. And, you know, who knows what else is going to come down the pipeline with Pascal Siakam's name hot on the trade block right now.
Got four numbers for you. First one's 26, and I say 26 because I'm looking. OG, I know he was a plus 26 in the Knicks blowout win over the Trailblazers tonight.
Okay.
So after we record this. So whatever that number was, his plus minus since he's gotten to New York, it's even greater now because
he's
plus 26.
It's going up.
I think he had 17 points in the first quarter. He knocked down a couple threes. But the three numbers I actually was going to say, 22, 23, 24. That's the ages of Scottie Barnes, RJ Barrett, and Emmanuel Quickley. OG Anunoby's not an old guy by any means, but he definitely fits in more with what the Knicks are trying to do with Julius Randle and Jalen Brunson. We also missed the whole 1A controversy that happened over Christmas break as well. But you look at building around Scottie Barnes, we've talked about that a lot and what that looks like. And it looks like getting younger and getting guys who can develop together on the same timeline and under the same system. And I don't want to read too much into it because RJ Barrett's actually, this is just, you know, his fifth year in the NBA, which is crazy to say that, but he's been in the league for 5 years. But to look at a coach like Darko Rajakovic, and when he was hired, we talked a lot about his philosophies about the pick and roll and some of the success stories of guys that he's worked with. And it's not a one-for-one comparison at all, but two of his success stories are Desmond Bane and Mikal Bridges. Obviously, Emmanuel Quickley and RJ Barrett are different players, but when you think about the way that he helped their mentality as far as just doing things, and I remember, I think it was Emmanuel Quickley's first or second game with the Raptors. I see him, got a steal, he's coming down the transition. He's like, you know, I'm just going to pull up and shoot it. And he's encouraged to do those type of things. And I saw that, you know, these guys are able, like you said, that's what that ceiling being removed from you looks like. And credit to Dennis Schroeder as well, who's really buying into coming off the bench and manning that second unit and having a guard rotation of Emmanuel Quickley and Dennis Schroeder for the time being is pretty solid. RJ Barrett, again, the ceiling's removed. I think just new surroundings, but also familiar surroundings and being back home and being Canadian basketball royalty as far as his dad having played for the Canadian Olympic team in 2000, his godfather being Steve Nash, his dad being the GM of Canada basketball, you know, it's more than just a homecoming for him. It's a full circle moment for somebody who I'm reading the story that interview he did. He's dropping Sonny Weems' name as far as being a Raptors fan. He's a real Raptors fan growing up. He's a Sonny Weems guy. So, you know, to see that, I think it's just, again, I think when you factor all of those things in, that's why it's not even riding the fence to say that it's a win-win trade for both teams, because everything that the Raptors are trying to do in the future, they've accomplished, and everything the Knicks are trying to do in the near future, in the short term, they are accomplishing again OG. So I'm interested to see how it plays out for the rest of this season, but also 2-3 years down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I don't want to jump the gun here, but at the same time, like, you know, they're seeing, like I said, immediate returns from this trade. And it feels like, you know, the team feels a little bit revitalized, like, you know, just constantly being mentioned in trade rumors. And is this guy going to go? Is this guy going to go? Like, that's going to bog down a team. That's going to weigh down a team.
100%.
And we're already seeing them play a little bit more freely with these two guys in the lineup. And I love the way that their offense looks, you know, compared to the way that it looked all season so far, you know, before these two guys got in the lineup. But now it's like, you know, Pascal Siakam is the next domino to fall, and everybody knows it. And the Raptors, you know, he's not willing to commit to re-signing anywhere else. So it's going to make it really, really tough for the Raptors to trade him and get the value that they want in return. Because, you know, if Siakam was under contract, then, you know, that report that we had from Shams Charania the other day of, you know, the Kings having significant interest, like, they probably would not be hesitating. And I think Keegan Murray is a very good player. I think he's, you know, he has what it takes to be an elite role player in the NBA. But I don't know if they're going to, like, you know, kind of pump fake on that trade if Pascal Siakam was under contract. I think they would be willing to trade him to Toronto, and Toronto gets the return that they want. But the fact that Siakam is not under contract at the end of the season, it seems like he wants to test unrestricted free agency. It's going to make it really tough to get a deal done. So I guess like my question for you is, you know, at what point do the Raptors just say, we want to see what the future of this team looks like as soon as possible? And should they just take, you know, the best Pascal Siakam deal that becomes available in the next couple of weeks? Or should they be as patient as possible, wait all the way up until the deadline, kind of assess all the options that they have, and then pull the trigger while knowing that, you know, there's kind of a hit being taken in the current team right now that knows, you know, it could be a day, 2 days, a week, a month before Pascal Siakam is out of here?
Typically, I would preach patience, but I think history has to play a factor, right? You look at, and they were able to execute a sign and trade with Kyle Lowry, and they were able to get Goran Dragic, which ended up becoming Thaddeus Young, and they got Precious Achiuwa, which landed them RJ Barrett and Emmanuel quickly in a roundabout way. But in that moment, it didn't really move anyone, right? Fred VanVleet walked, and they got nothing in return. So it kind of feels like this is the time right now. We're in the first week of January. We're about a month away from the trade deadline, give or take a few days. This is the time where they really need to, as Brian Windhorst called it, needs to be in the deal zone. They need to really kind of get into that spot and figure out what it is that they want, what's the least that they will take, and honestly act quickly before it's not there. Because if the writing's kind of on the wall that even if he isn't moved ahead of the deadline, he's probably going to go elsewhere. He's going to be 30 this spring. Good time to turn 30 is spring 2024 is what I'm hearing anyway. But that doesn't fit in with the 22, 23, 24 and what they've got going on, you know, with that youth movement. So I think, you know, it's the best interest of both parties. Pascal Siakam is still in his prime. If he was playing for a team that was two or three or four wins better, I think there would be much more respect. Honestly, if he was playing stateside, I think there would be more respect on how well he's playing this season and how good of a player he is. So I personally am of the opinion, get what you can. Obviously don't, you know, sell yourself extremely short, but you also recognize that you don't have very much leverage. I don't know where you stand, but they got to do something.
Yeah, I feel like they got to make a move sooner rather than later. Like the way that, like the quick nature of how fast they traded OG and got a pretty good return for him, like it just feels like the time is up and it feels like the writing is on the wall. And I just think they'd be better off if they move on. Like, I'm not saying rush and just take the first deal available, but, you know, I'm also, this is a complete theory, but I'm just going to throw it out there. Like, the idea that, like, last year, like, Pascal Siakam was on the trade block. Like, it was, you know, his name popped up, whether it was Indy or Atlanta was another team that constantly popped up around Pascal, and they still are. But, you know, he was under contract for another full season. And I think the Raptors kind of, like, dangled him out, and it was like, all right, let's see what we could maybe get in for a turn. Or get in return for Pascal. But at the same time, like, I don't know if they actually really intended to trade him last year, unless the right deal presented itself. So now I feel like this year they're probably lobbying him to those same teams, and they're a little bit more frustrated with the return that they're getting now as opposed to a year ago. So they're like, you know, a year ago, this guy and this guy and this guy was available, but now they're not available because, you know, you don't know if he's going to sign with you long term. Like, it just feels like they might be almost stubborn in a way of like they held on to him for a little bit too long, like a full season too long.
Yep.
And now the options that they had available to them last year aren't available anymore. And they're wishing that, and you know, it goes hand in hand with Pascal not having the same caliber season that we saw from him the past 3 years.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of a bad timing situation all around of him not playing to his best ability, but also don't think that's tanking his value too much because I think people know that when he gets put in a new situation, he's probably going to be able to, you know, rise back to that all-star caliber player, at least, you know, as a second or third option on a team that's trying to pursue a championship. But I do think that, you know, the Raptors are probably having a little bit of like remorse of not selling him last year because those same players and draft picks that they were probably offered last year when they didn't really intend to trade them are no longer available.
Yeah, you saying that, it just makes it even wilder to think that Kobe Bufkin was the hang up apparently in the offseason, and he's had his injuries this year, but Hawks aren't even finding time for the guy that they weren't willing to part ways with to get Pascal Siakam, and the Hawks are a mess of their own right now. one of the more disappointing teams this season, and they have DeJounte Murray apparently on the trading block as well. So we'll see a lot to be done and sorted out before the trade deadline, which is February 8th. And obviously we'll have plenty more on Sound System about the trade deadline. One more note about Pascal Spicy P. Siakam. For every game that he's still with the Raptors, we get to enjoy the new nickname, Spicy Barnes Barrett Quickly, Spicy BBQ. I like it. I think it's good. I appreciate that. So for as many games we can enjoy spicy barbecue, we can enjoy spicy barbecue. We're going to take a quick break and get back into some of the teams that have been struggling around the league and see if maybe Kyle and I can figure out what's wrong with them and send some remedies in. I know I said I opened the show with bad news and injuries. I guess we'll open with back up with teams that are struggling. So I guess it's kind of bad storylines. But when you look at the standings in the Western Conference specifically, what stands out to me, the Suns are 19 and 18 at the time of recording, Lakers 18 and 19, and the Warriors are 17 and 19. Coming into the year, you and I talked about just how much of a gauntlet that division that has those five teams is going to be. And those three specifically seem to not be able to get it together. And it seems like Darvin Ham's job is really much, pretty much not his much longer. His seat is getting really hot. But who knows? Maybe he turns it back around. And shout out to LeBron with a very passive aggressive calling the Clippers the T-Lou Clippers and making sure to give credit to their head coach after they went head to head. So and the Clippers are playing really well. they're 23 and 13, the team that we thought were going to be, you know, trying to figure it out. They're 10 games over 500, and these other teams are just – so where do we even start? What do you make of the Darvin Ham? I know you actually tweeted about the Darvin Ham situation and his job being under fire, job security, or lack thereof. But is that fair or foul?
It feels foul. But, like, I mean, that's just life of being the head coach of LeBron James and the head coach of the Los Angeles Lakers. Like, who was it the other night? Someone – actually, it was I think it was Christian Wood who had, like, a pretty insightful – like moment in his post-game press conference where someone asked him about the Darvin Ham job security. And he's like, I don't really think Coach Ham's that worried about it, man. He's like, that's just the territory that comes with being a Laker. That's the territory that comes with playing on this team. And I think the playing on this team was kind of like a, you know, insinuating like being LeBron James' teammate. Like there's just, you're facing more pressure and higher expectations than any other player, coach, team in the league. And that's been the case for the 21 years that he's been in the NBA. You know, you referenced the tweet that I had. I actually updated the stats before we hopped on here. I mean, last year, the Lakers threw 37 games. They're one game under 500 right now. They're 18 and 19 through 37 games. Darvin Ham supposedly on the hot seat. Last year, during his first season as the Lakers head coach, they were 16 and 21 through 37 games. And that team turned it around, figured out, and went all the way to the Western Conference Finals. And granted, they got swept by the Nuggets, who were clearly the best team in the NBA last year. But there were five games under 500 at this point, and his job was completely fine, and they were just figuring it out, and then they did figure it out, and they went all the way to the Western Conference Finals. So one game under 500, and everybody is panicking over, what, a couple lineup changes, like starting lineup changes, changes to the rotation. It's like, this was never meant to be a good regular season team in the first place. That is not the point when LeBron James is at this stage in his career, in the 21, in his 21st season, and he has already proved he can still play to the caliber of a player that can carry a team all the way to the Western Conference Finals, you know, this season. He's already proved that he can get back to that level when he needs to be, if he needs to flip the switch and turn it on. Anthony Davis has been surprisingly healthy, and he's been incredible when he's healthy. Like, he's another player who, this just in, like, he's going to take it easy from time to time during the regular season. I mean, the guy pick and chooses sometimes to play in playoff games, never mind regular season games. This was never supposed to be a good regular season basketball team. So I'm a little bit surprised that everything is kind of, you know, the sky is falling for the Los Angeles Lakers when they're only one game under 500. I know that they're barely in the playoff race. Like, I know they're barely in the playoff picture, but this is a team that is going to make the playoffs. I'd say that confidently. They're not going to miss the playoffs. And if they get there, they're going to be really, really tough to face, and no one is going to want to see them at any point in the playoffs. So why are they panicking so much to the point they're ready to, you know, kick their head coach out the door? You just threw him off the hot. He's not even on the hot seat. You just threw him off the hot seat. You said it wasn't even his job anymore, and they're only one game under 500. So I'm just like, I'm trying to see where the bar is here in the panic in Lakerland, because I really don't feel like things are as bad as they're being made out to be.
Tell them how you feel, KI. That was a much more passionate response than I was expecting. But I appreciate that because, I mean, that's currently in your backyard anyway. So you really got a feel for what's going on out there. And it's interesting because when I'm thinking back to where they were last year and thinking back to LeBron James teams, and actually I'm curious, if you had to guess how many head coaches LeBron James has played for in his career, what would you think it is in 21 seasons?
Oh, man, 21 seasons. There's only been, what, like two or three in-season head coaching changes, so maybe 20, I don't know. I'm going to say 9 is the number I'm just going to throw out there.
Wow.
9 head coaches.
All right. I don't know what you win, but you win it because it's 9 on the dot. Darvin Ham is head coach number 9. But it is because...
That's a complete guess.
Yeah, he had Mike Brown, you know, for 5 years in Cleveland, and then Spo for 4 mm-hmm. years. By the way, shout out to Spo getting the bag. We saw tweet earlier, 8-year extension for over $120 million to succeed Pat Riley. Obviously, that's how, you know, the Heat are the Heat. They just keep that going. I'm not going to say the two words that they have on their basketball court, but that's how the Heat are the Heat.
The hardest working, most determined, toughest.
exactly. That'll keep going for at least, you know, however many more years Eric Spoelstra is going to be on the sideline in the front office in Miami. But, yeah, those two guys for, you know, 9 of his 21 years combined, but the David Blatt midseason firing when they were number one in the Eastern Conference, and then T. Lou comes in and leads into a championship. Paul Silas was his head coach his rookie year, and the second year he was let go. And they were actually in the playoff picture when they let him go, and they missed the playoffs that year too. So just looking through some history of LeBron James head coaches, it's interesting, and obviously as his star has grown bigger, the job has become harder and harder. But just being a Los Angeles Laker is harder because, again, like you were saying, when I was thinking about last year, it was Russell Westbrook that was a guy that when they were struggling last year, it was like, okay, he's out of the door. And the writing was on the wall, and we talked about it for a while, and eventually they made the trade, and now he's on the other side of the hall at Crypto, and he's living his best life with the Clippers. That said, it kind of feels like when things aren't going according to plan, it's got to be somebody. And I'm curious, just based on the way that the roster that the Lakers have is constructed, is it as simple as saying, okay, it's Darvin Ham, it's a trade that needs to be made, both, neither? Because we know it. It's going to happen. We saw when the Cavs got a brand new team at the trade deadline in 2018. They're going to get active. More guys going to be available to be traded in about a week's time. Like, it's going to happen. Do you think that they'd be fine just making a trade and sticking with Darvin Ham? Because it seems like you don't have a problem with the lineup changes. The only lineup problem I have an issue with is when he started 4 power forwards. You got to draw the line somewhere. They started LeBron, Rui, Torian Prince, Jared Vanderbilt, and Anthony Davis. Oh, we can't stand for that, but everything else is cool.
No. I mean, even in the positionless era of basketball, no, we cannot stand for 4 power forwards in the starting lineup. I agree with you there. No, I mean, I do think that, like, you know, after going on that rant, like, I'm going to sit here and say that, like, I do think there are moves to be made. I don't think it necessarily has to be firing the head coach, but, like, they clearly feel right now like they are not a championship caliber team. And mm-hmm. I don't necessarily see it in them either. Like, I don't think that they could beat the Nuggets in a 7-game series right now. You know, I think they're still a playoff team. I think they're still a team that is capable of going on a deep run, but I do think there is a move to be made. You know, again, we're talking about the names that have been thrown around out there, like whether it's a DeJounte Murray or, you know, Zach LaVine, like those are the types of guys that are being made available. And, you know, maybe they would help the Lakers. I do think both of those players would help the Lakers. It's just, you know, what are they going to give up to get them is the question, because, you know, I don't think that, like last year they got Rui Hachimura for nothing. Like they were pulling these trades out of thin air. And I'm like, how mm-hmm. everyone's just working for the Lakers here. What's going on? But, you know, I don't know if they have another move like that in their back pocket, but I do think there is a move to be made. I just don't think it has to be firing the head coach. I mean, unless things are really bad in that locker room and like the players are really revolting over these lineup changes and they don't understand why Austin Reeves can't get a start and they don't understand why we're starting 4 power forwards and like why we're changing things up every night. But like, I don't know. I mean, things aren't going well right now. So he's just trying to mix things up. He's changing up the rotation, changing up the matchups, you know, changing up the offense a little bit from something that I read earlier today. It's just like, you know, he's trying to make changes. I'm sure he's feeling the pressure big time. But, you know, if they were to make a roster change, like try and trade and bring somebody in, and then it doesn't work, then, you know, his seat gets even hotter. But like the way that they are right now, like it just feels impatient to feel like his job, you know, we could wake up tomorrow morning to a Shams or Woj notification that Darvin Ham has been fired. Like, to me, that feels premature.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think it's interesting. You mentioning the trades they were able to make last year. And since it's still, we're coming out of the holiday season, it made me think about something I said when I was like a really young kid at Christmas time. I said, Santa brought me stuff I didn't even know I wanted. I was like super happy. Like every year the Lakers make trades for guys we didn't even know were available that they could use. Like Rui Hachimura didn't even know he's on the trading block. I knew right. He was kind of on the outs in Washington, but I had no idea the Lakers were in the mix. I had no idea they could get him for Kendrick Nunn. And I had no idea he would end up being like a guy who was a major contributor, you know, in those playoff series that they had, you know, to get to the conference finals. And you mentioned that, and I guess a two-parter that I'll ask you. But when I look first, you know, when we talk about the Suns, Lakers, Warriors, based on what I'm hearing from you, do you think the Lakers are in the best position to actually do something when they get to the playoffs or the postseason? And on the other hand, I feel like if you're one of these teams who have championship DNA, the Suns have been to the finals, at least Devin Booker has, Kevin Durant has won two championships. We know what the Warriors have been capable of in the past, and we know who the Lakers are. When you look at a team like Minnesota and OKC, who were playing teams last year, they haven't really been there before, but they are the hunted now. Similar to what we saw last year with the Kings and what we saw yep. last year with the Grizzlies, I feel like these veteran teams are going to be kind of – eager to have an opportunity to kind of give those guys a lesson to welcome them to the postseason.
For sure. I think you're right on the money there. Like, I think, you know, the comparison between the Warriors and the Kings last year, like the Kings were a fun story that everybody, myself included, was loving. Like I was, you know, I was lighting the beam after every game. Like I was, you know, I was joining in with them. You know, they were one of my favorite teams to watch last year, but when they drew the Warriors in the first round, I think they took them to seven games. Like the Kings took the Warriors seven games. That was a really good series. That was a really entertaining series. But like, how many people were really surprised the Warriors ended up winning that series? Probably not a lot, because experience goes a long way, especially when you're a team like the Warriors. Like that's different than the Lakers, who, yes, they made a run to the Western Conference Finals, but like that championship DNA is a little bit different. You know, I know LeBron and AD had gotten over the hump before too, but like it just feels like the other pieces on that roster, you know, weren't or wouldn't have that same effect against a younger team. You know, but all that to say, like, I don't think there's any of those younger teams that would want to see the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs. The Warriors, like, it feels the same way. The only team that I'm just really not that sure about is the Suns. And I just, you know, that's a team that I like. I like watching, but I can't buy in. Like, I just, the way that they operate on offense, it just feels like they're rolling the ball out and playing pickup. Like, they're not scaring anybody or stopping anybody defensively. They don't have even an 8-man rotation or 7-man rotation, even when you trim it down in the playoffs, that can go head-to-head with, you know, any team they have to face in the first round. Like, they just, it feels like they are the furthest away of the three teams to me, because at least the Warriors have the young guys that they can kind of plug and play and mix and match in the rotation until they find something that works. The Lakers have LeBron James and they have Anthony Davis and they have other pieces that they had already proven last year can get to the conference finals. You know, is that their ceiling? Maybe it is, but they can get there. The Suns, I'm just not sure what they can even do. Like, what assets do they have available anymore? They have exhausted all of their assets. They have, you know, put all their chips into the bucket of Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker, three guys who need the ball in their hand to be successful, and, you know, haven't necessarily proved that they can all coexist, because they haven't been able to stay on the court together because Bradley Beal keeps getting hurt. So, you know, I just don't know where they go from here specifically. It feels like to me they are the furthest away out of those three teams that you just mentioned, those three high profile teams. And I'm very curious to see, you know, what kind of rabbit they try and pull out of the hat around the trade deadline to improve that roster, because it really does not feel like there's many moves to be made in Phoenix.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, you mentioned the way they built their team was, you know, three stars or two superstars or however you want to, you know, kind of tier those guys, right? And then a lot of guys on veteran minimum contracts, kind of similar to what the Heat did in the first year. In 2010-11, and that didn't work out, one, but also the league was so different back then, right? And I think that, you know, you mentioned Bradley Beal's injuries. They're kind of getting to the point where that's, you know, the sample size is getting big enough to where that excuse isn't built in anymore. I know it might have thrown them off a little bit and maybe impacted how they figured things out. But now, you know, we are, you know, we're approaching the middle of January, and you know, if they keep hanging back now, like, of course, yeah, nobody wants to see Kevin Durant and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal in a playoff series. But at the same time, like, if they can figure out how to make life difficult for those three and say, okay, well, those other two guys can beat us. And I know Yusef Nurkic is also a solid guy and a solid player, but I would dare him to try to beat me 4 times out of 7. Obviously, you know, Kevin Durant and Bradley Beal and Devin Booker are good enough to, you know, do things, you know, every now and then. But I just think that what they have, like you said, is not sustainable, and they're pretty strapped on what they can do to fix the situation. So I'm with you on that. I do think they're a postseason team. They're far too talented not to be, but I don't know if that means play in, fizzle out. They play against a team and they just don't have it. We saw them fizzle out in the postseason last year too against a Nuggets team who ended up winning the championship. So, you know, don't get me wrong, but still, we'll see how that goes. I'm curious to see. One other team in the Eastern Conference, again, they're 25-12, the Bucks. They're 5-5 in their last 10. Giannis is calling out the equipment manager. Are you concerned about them right now? Or do you just think that do you think that they just need to, they're just kind of cruising through the regular season?
That was such a money quote. Like, that was just so funny. Like, that is like the type of stuff that the internet runs away with, and you could just get lost scrolling with people, like, you know, just responding. That and the Rick Carlisle quote was the other one that we missed over the time that, you know, we hadn't been recording.
Yes.
Am I jumping the gun here?
No, I was going to say that. Giannis had two quotes, but go ahead. Rick Carlisle and Rick Carlisle too.
Well, the Rick Carlisle one was dating a pretty girl gets old every once in a while if she can't guard anybody or something along those lines. And the internet had a field day with that one too. It's like, yeah, when she's a 10 out of 10, but she can't defend in isolation, like, you know, the internet's having a field day. But, you know, going back to the Bucks and, you know, how they need their equipment manager to step up in order for the team to be successful. You know, I'm not all that worried about them. I think this is a situation where, you know, they obviously have their limitations defensively, especially when it comes to like point of attack defenders, because like Damian Lillard and Malik Beasley like couldn't guard a cone at this point. But, you know, they, even through like Damian Lillard's slump, like the guy was still averaging like 27 points per game. Like Giannis has been absolutely ridiculous this year. Like, even you and I talked about it on here before, like, even if Chris Middleton isn't, you know, all-star Chris Middleton, he's still a really, really good role player who's going to be valuable in the playoffs. Like Brooke Lopez, same thing. Like, he might not be the same player that he was last year, but he's still going to be able to protect the rim. Like, I still think that they have all the pieces in place to go on the deep type of playoff run that they are hoping to go on. But it makes sense to me that, like, you know, they're a little under a little bit more scrutiny during the regular season. Cause I think, like, especially, I expected them to click faster than like even like the new look Celtics did, like the new pieces bringing in Jrue Holiday and Kristaps Porzingis and more guys to share the ball with, and how are they going to fit into a rotation and all that. Like, I expected the Bucks to be the team that clicks faster, and I think a lot of people felt that way. So the fact that it's not like fitting seamlessly, like, you know, two puzzle pieces, is what is kind of causing an uproar. But I still think that, and I'm sure you feel the same way, but I don't want to speak for you. Like, I still feel like they are a team that is built to go on a deep playoff run, and, you know, could very easily go on a deep playoff run. And it's still, to me, and I say this knowing that, you know, this is going to be like the, I can't even think of the reference that I'm trying to use here, but the Heat are going to be like right over my shoulder. Like, don't forget about us yet. We have not gone anywhere. But like, it does kind of still feel like it could be on a crash course for a Celtics Bucks Eastern Conference Finals, unless the Heat crashed the party like that.
Yeah, they tend to crash the party. I will say, with the Bucks, and part of it is kind of common sense, right? You trade Jrue Holiday, an all-world defender, one of the best perimeter defenders of this generation, for Damian Lillard, who's not. We know that. He's not. And you have a new head coach who, Adrian Griffin, was a defensive-minded player and kind of a defensive-minded coach during his time in Toronto, but he adjusted to his personnel. And I think the big thing that we get so hung up on is the defensive identity that this Bucks team had when they had Eric Bledsoe and Malcolm Brogdon and Jrue Holiday and all those guys. These aren't the same Bucks, right? So I think that getting that out of our head is a big part of where our expectations lie with this Bucks team. And I think that when you see the Bucks give up 115 or 120 in win shootouts and things like that against these teams, it's not what we're used to seeing from the Bucks, but it's like, okay, this is a different Bucks team. Whether or not that's sustainable, we'll see when the playoffs get here, but that's just, it is what it is. Now, I was going to say, when I caught you before we hit the shout outs, I'll ask you, just give me an idea. If your vote for the best quote, is it Carlisle's, you know, dating a pretty girl gets old if she can't guard, if she's not switching 1 through 5 or whatever, if her drop coverage isn't on point, is it Giannis saying that Quentin Measure needs to wash clothes better? Or is it Giannis saying that when you lose to the Pacers four times, you think about it at night when you're about to get freaky, you thinking about the Pacers? I don't know who takes the crown, but I think it might be Giannis.
Yeah, that last one from Giannis was wild. That was another one that I'm like, you know, I think he's like a pretty calculated dude, and like he's delivered some awesome post game moments and press conferences, and I like appreciate that, you know, he's willing to like open up a little bit even after losses and like show some character. But yeah, he might have lost me on that one. I'm going with Rick Carlisle just because the night that I found that like Twitter thread, I was sitting on like the quote tweets and scrolling and laughing forever. Like you said, it's like, you know, she's a 10 out of 10, but she can't guard 1 through 5. Like people were getting like really niche with it. And they're like, you know, when she's an absolute liability is like in drop coverage and all those things. Like I was losing it. So yeah, I think Rick Carlisle is taking the cake right now for the, you know, just most absurd quote that you would not have expected out of him so far this NBA season.
I feel like you said, Rick Carlisle is a little more off the cuff, and Giannis again calculated. Kudos to him taking the making a light moment out of a frustrating situation, losing to a team 4 out of 5 times this year because of the in-season tournament they played 5 times this year. But you know, again, like I said earlier, Pacers have their number. Now, as we wrap up here, I always have the weird feeling when I tee it up that you and I might have the same shout out in mind. But we'll wrap up with our first shout out of 2024. Who you got?
My shout out goes to someone who should be an all-star. I really, from the bottom of my heart, feel this way, but I know he's not going to be an all-star. I'd be pleasantly surprised if he is. It goes to Derek White, man, who has been the most consistent player on the best team in the league. And Derek White, for those who have been watching the Celtics, it is like an out-of-body experience watching him knock down threes the way that he has been, because it's at the point where I'm more shocked when he misses than he is when he makes it. And when the Celtics traded for Derek White, the biggest concern was that you knew he was a player who could play make with the ball in his hands, which they needed, and you knew he was a high-level perimeter defender. It was is he going to be able to shoot the ball well enough to stick in, at the time it was Ime Udoka's rotation, but still kind of the same sentiment of Joe Mazzulla ball in you know, the way they like to play five out and everybody can shoot. Every player who steps on the floor for the most part can shoot. That was the biggest concern with Derek White. Derek White came in with the Celtics, and I think he was like a career 35% three-point shooter. It might have even been lower than that. This year, he's shooting a career best 41.2% from three. He's shooting 43.1% on catch and shoot opportunities from three. He's shooting 37.7% on pull-ups from three. So this guy has come in as someone who, oh, if he could shoot, that'd be really good, and like really good for the Celtics. And that'll be a good way for him to like stick in the rotation and really make an impact too. He has become one of the best 3-point shooters on that team. And he has fully assumed the starting point guard role, averaging 16 points, 5 assists, 4 rebounds, over a steal and a block a game. He has been absolutely incredible. And I also want to give a shout out to Brad Stevens, because he got Derek White for Josh Richardson, Romeo Langford, a 2022 first round pick that turned into Blake Wesley, and a 2028 first round pick swap. So nothing that the Celtics are really missing. So my shout out goes to Derek White. I don't think he'll be an all-star. I really hope he is. It'd be a pleasant surprise if he is, but you know, he's one of those guys who, you know, Mike Conley was like that for a while. Like he just couldn't make the all-star game, but everyone knew how good he was. Like Derek White is kind of entering that territory of, he's starting to get the respect he deserves for how good he is. He might not be all-star. You know, he might not get the title of being an all-star, but he is a role player all-star for sure.
I like that. I'm not going to say I'm super surprised by that. That's not who I had, but Derek White, I saw a video of him coming out on the court to just do his pregame warmups at TD Garden, and to see the way he's been embraced by that fan base. And you mentioned every little thing that he does, the type of winning basketball player he is. I think back to his putback game winner in the conference finals last year. He has all the makings, you know, of a fan favorite type. Obviously, you can never feel a number 36 size void, but you know, for him to come in and be the new era of fan favorite in Boston has been pretty cool to see, and it happened pretty quickly too. When you mentioned, you know, the move that they made for him, I think there was some mixed, it was met with honestly mixed emotions when it first happened, and then, you know, now it's like, yo, what's this 2028 eighth grader, you know, gonna do right now for the Celtics team? And now Derek White is a key member of a team who has a legitimate shot at winning an NBA championship this year. And actually, I picked them to win now because they got a shout out from Lil B on Twitter, and they paid their respects the back gone. To Lil B. So, you know, and maybe that's the answer to why the Suns are struggling. Anyway, that's a different conversation for a different time. My shout out, you know, we mentioned the Suns, we mentioned the Lakers and the Warriors and where they are in the standings, right there behind them, actually ahead of the Warriors, Utah Jazz, 18-20. Second year in a row, and maybe it's just me, but second year in a row, we come into the year, I'm like, you know, the Jazz had some fun last year. They caught some people by surprise. They're going to come back down to earth. They lose 11 of their first 15 games this year. I'm thinking to myself, yes, they have come back down to earth. Next thing I know, I look at the standings. They've won 8 of their last 10. One of them was them getting drugged in Boston, who, by the way, has yet to lose a game at home this year. But this Jazz team is pesky again, and I don't know if they're going to end up making trades. And Lauri Markkanen's been mentioned in a lot of trade talks, John Collins, Jordan Clarkson. They have a lot of pieces that other teams who are one or two pieces away from winning might want to make a move for. But in the meantime, Will Hardy's got those guys playing good basketball. Colin Sexton, Keontae George has been playing really well. I mentioned John Collins already. He's playing good basketball. Kelly Olynyk's playing good basketball. A lot of these guys on that Utah Jazz team are playing good basketball, and it kind of reminds me of that Clippers team in 2019. They were major sellers, and they still somehow made the playoffs and still somehow made the Warriors sweat in the first round. I made this comparison the other day. Who knows how many trades they end up making or don't end up making, but we do know Danny Ainge is in that front office, so they probably will make some trades. That being said, I think the Jazz are another example of teams that are kind of rebuilding the right way. So for these teams that are either in the middle or on the fence on whether they should rebuild or not, take a look at what Utah is doing. Take a look at what OKC has done. Take a look at what Houston has done and Orlando as teams who have done it the right way. And again, I have no idea. The Jazz are projected to win 34 and a half games preseason. They're playing pretty much 500 basketball right now. So if they're a 40-win team, again, exceeding expectations 2 years in a row, shout out to the Jazz.
I'm glad that you gave him a shout out too, because like thinking back on it, I don't know if that's a team that's even gotten a single mention on this pod for the most part. Like I think I might've talked about Keontae George at one point just because, yeah, you know, he's a prospect who I liked last year. And like you said, he's playing awesome in that system. But you know, they do deserve some love. And I think, you know, last week was a great example of like, they rattled off whatever it was, 5 wins in a row, and they go into that Boston game. And I was really excited to watch that game, 'cause I'm like, you know, this team's been playing really inspired basketball. I'm excited to watch them play. And then, you know, they got pushed around by the Celtics in Boston. Kind of tough scheduling because the Celtics just came off that tough loss to the Thunder a couple nights before. And that would be an easy point for the Jazz to kind of be like, oh, all right, you know, that was like our real test to go up against one of the best teams in the league and see where we stand. And they got pushed around. And instead of, you know, kind of just crumbling and being like, oh, all right, well, maybe we're not as good as we thought they were, they go out and they beat the 76ers and the Bucks on back-to-back nights. So, you know, I feel like that is kind of a sign of the heart that team has. And I think that comparison that you made with the Clippers team that just had a lot of heart between guys like Pat Bev, Montrezl Harrell, a young Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tobias Harris, like they were just like, all right, well, hey, you know, the front office is going to make some moves around us because they're building for the future. But these are the guys that we got in this locker room, and we got some pretty talented players who are going to play hard, and they're going to play harder than most teams on most nights. I think Will Hardy, like you said, one of the youngest coaches in the league, is really starting to kind of relate to these guys, and we're starting to see things click in Utah a little bit. And, you know, Jordan Clarkson is someone whose name has popped up on the trade block. Like, he is obviously a key part of that team. He's been around longer than just about anybody on that roster. But it's like, even if they sell him, there's going to be somebody else, a young guy, that's going to be willing to step up and fill those minutes and play his butt off and try and get the Jazz into that play-in tournament range. And that's kind of why the play-in tournament is so beautiful, the same way that we started this with Memphis and how they were kind of fighting for a spot. But it just gives these young teams an opportunity to feel what a playoff atmosphere feels like, and the opportunity to put a scare into a team like, let's call it Phoenix, that like they could play in the first round and really give them hell. So, you know, shout out to the Jazz, man. I like that shout out a lot. They're a team that if you have NBA League Pass and you haven't tapped in to watch them play yet, they have some exciting young pieces on that roster. And they're starting to build their own treasure trove of draft picks. So I'm excited to see what that franchise looks like in the future.
Yeah, one last thing I'll say. You mentioned League Pass. I'm not too proud to admit, and I tweeted these exact words. I very, very attentively watched Jazz Pistons on League Pass about a week ago, went into overtime, 154-148 final score. Jordan Clarkson had 36 points. He also, I think he had a triple-double the game before. So the Jazz are a fun team. They're an exciting team to see, and we'll see whatever direction they go, they're going to be good in the next 3 to 5 years. So remember we said it to start 2024 when the Jazz are, you know, one of the last teams standing in 2027. We said it here first. But we'll be back all 2024. Big things in store for NBA Sound System. So we thank you for subscribing to the podcast. Make sure to continue to tune in to what we've got coming, because we've got some big things coming this year. For Kyle Irving, my name is Gil McGregor. Thanks again for tuning in. We will catch you back here next week. No more three-week break this time. Catch you next week on NBA Sound System.